I guess that's my only concern. I don't understand what harm we actually do if they...
Well, take a look at the second page here on sub two. It says, during the 5-year period after the person's released, et cetera, he's got to re-register, and he may not be on, he or she may not be on probation for 5 years. So I think we are, there has been a policy decision made that we're going to follow these people around at least for 5 years,
as
regardless.
As best we can, yeah.
Right, of what their status is. So I think discharge is okay.
Hey, I don't really...
I don't think it does any harm, Senator Schumacher, I guess is what I'm saying. And if they're still released on any form of supervised release, they still fall under it. I don't think we're getting anybody out of the net as much as we can bring in, and fully we're not covering everybody for their length as long as people would like. But
okay.
We haven't moved. Have we moved the amendments?
No, I'm not sure.
Senator Hill moved Senate Bill 667-1 amendments. Huh? Did you move?
I'm sorry. No.
I wasn't here.
No.
I
just kidding. I attempted to. It was cut off, but.
Okay, Senator Springer moves. We'll give him a break. Senator Springer moved the -1 amendments. Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered. I thought you were just visiting with Greenspan.
It's a full-time job,
right?
Helping each other out.
Would you like to move the bill?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Move the bill as amended to the floor. Do pass.
Okay. Senator Spring moves Senate Bill 667 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Further discussion.
Discharge is still in the amendment.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Call roll, please, Pat.
Sherman.
Aye.
Brockman.
Brensky. Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Aye.
Turner.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Senator
Green,
you carry.
We can ask Senator Bradbury as well, but I'll be glad to assist him. He may want to carry that. If not, I'll be glad to.
Okay.
Thank you.
You'll let our staff know. Okay, Jack, let's move ahead here. Where are you? Just name one that you're ready to go on.
Okay. Pick a bill, any bill.
369, relating to imitation. Oh, that's the one I circled. Okay. We don't have another one? Yeah, have you done 969? Let's do that one. 969 instead of 269.
Senate Bill 969 is at the request of the Judicial Department and has to do with interpreters in various types of cases. I have several amendments for you, as well as a sheet explaining those. I'll pass them out for you. There's a letter in your file dated May 2nd, 89 from Kingsley explaining the different amendments. There is a set of 1 through 4, and what these amendments represent are the different policy choices about who we want to include in the group to be paid for by the state.
This has to do, this bill, if you recall, had to do with the courts paying for interpreters. We had a long discussion about what the federal requirements under the civil rights laws are, and whether we had to try to expand it to people who do not speak English or just are hearing impaired. And Kingsley, if you'd like to come up, explain the amendments to us. Jack needs a little help sorting
that. Madam Chair, while they're coming up, I guess I missed part of the discussion. May I ask the witness a question?
Yes, please.
This speaks only to parties and witnesses. Is that correct?
For the record, Kingsley Click from the State Court Administrator's Office, Madam Chair, Senator Springer. It does, it just addresses court proceedings and parties and witnesses or other persons that would be before the court in a proceeding.
And could you tell us what the financial impact are, for a refresher for Senator Springer, who I think really did miss the hearing on that day you were gone. So we had a long discussion of the impact. This bill is scheduled to go to Ways and Means.
Right, I understand.
So
I just,
we need to know.
Yeah. Well, I'm more than glad to support the concept and whatever amendments the committee or those who looked at this issue feel most comfortable with. I'm curious if the question has ever arisen whether or not a person would be denied all the rights and protections of a jury trial if they happen to be a person who's in need of these services. But those folks who may also be in need of those services, translation of any kind, are denied the right or opportunity to serve on a jury. Are you following my question?
I believe so.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, the qualifications for communication in English for jurors is in Chapter 10 of the ORS. It requires an ability to understand the English language, and so it would preclude people who could not converse in English because of foreign language background or weren't U.S. citizens. It does not preclude deaf or hearing impaired persons from serving as jurors, and the statutes set out qualifications for interpreters and how they're treated in the during deliberations and things like that. So, and in fact, in Oregon, for the last biennium, I know of at least two instances where we had deaf jurors serve on cases.
Who pays for the cost of interpretation in those cases?
The state.
The state does. So a person would not be precluded from jury service if they had this impairment or inability to understand without that assistance.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. The amendments. Discussion thereof, please.
Madam Chair, at the last hearing, there was some interest in separating out the deaf and hearing impaired, the sign language interpretation from foreign language interpretation, and looking at the state's obligation to pay, one, in instances where the party couldn't pay, and two, didn't have an ability to pay, and the other, in instances where they had an ability to pay. The federal law, as regards the sign language interpretation, or the deaf and hearing impaired, made an obligation for public entities to pay whether or not there was an ability to pay. It didn't, and we said technically, we being the judicial department as far as it, as opposed to administrative agencies and stuff, at this point do not accept any federal funds, so technically we're exempt from it. Doesn't mean sometime in the future we wouldn't. So we did do some LCs. Our original bill, we just made it if you're indigent, the state paid. If you were non-indigent, then if you had an ability to pay, then you paid for the interpretation services. And that's, LC1 was just our cleanup on that original bill. LC2 through 4 all include paying for sign language interpretation in court proceedings, in all court proceedings, whether the person is indigent or not. The only distinctions in LC 2, 3, and 4 is with the foreign language and how much you want the state to assume responsibility for. LC 2 has the state paying for foreign language only if the person is indigent or the court needs the interpreter in order to determine if the person is. LC 3 has the state paying for foreign language interpreters whenever needed in all criminal proceedings, because there was some discussion about because of the criminal natures, if you should be distinguishing between ability to pay or not and providing that service. And so it provides them for all criminal proceedings in foreign language, whether you have an ability to pay or not, but in civil proceedings like domestic relations, civil private suits, landlord-tenant, whatever, makes a distinction between ability to pay or not.
What's it now?
I'm sorry?
Which?
LC3.
Three.
Yeah. And then LC4 is the simple version. The state pays for any type of interpreter in any type of proceeding, foreign language, sign language, whatever, if an interpreter is needed. And below each of the LCs is what we've estimated to be the costs of implementation. The sign language interpretation is SLI, and for all proceedings, our estimate is $30,000 for the biennium. The Commission on the Handicap did a survey of several other states that kept record of these costs, and this is in line with what their costs were. Washington is approximately $30,000. Massachusetts was $31,000. So our greatest need in the courts has been with the foreign language interpretation.
Chair?
Senator Gretzky.
What are the courts doing at the present time with regard to folks that need interpreters or translators?
Madam Chair, Senator Gretzky, it's kind of a catch-22. Right now, under the present evidence code, the court appoints interpreters in any proceeding where there's a need for one. In criminal proceedings, they only pay if the person is indigent. In civil proceedings, they only pay if the person has court-appointed counsel and is indigent, because the only statutory authorization for payment in the civil cases is through the statutes that deal with reimbursement of court-appointed attorneys. It says any cost necessary for the defense, and so we pay, saying, if you need an interpreter to communicate with the court and your court-appointed counsel, then we can pay for it under there. So what it does is puts the courts in the situation where Abuse Prevention Act, someone comes in, they're indigent, but they don't, you know, you don't get court-appointed counsel for that. If they want to provide it and they have no way of paying for it, they use their service and supply budget. But even that's kind of, we hate to be in a situation where we're paying for things with state funds that we don't have express statutory authorization for. So this would let us do it whenever we needed it.
Are these amounts that are indicated at the bottom of each of your amendments additional costs over and above what you would expect to pay under the present system?
Senator Gretzky, yes, they are.
So apparently you're looking towards expanding the use of translators and interpreters over what you're doing at the present time.
Well, Senator Gretzky, yes, basically, because we've been turning away people, and it's the other thing, there may be some savings from indigent defense, and we calculated maybe between 50,000 to 100,000 possibly, because we're now using court-appointed counsel as kind of the subterfuge, if you will, as a way in to pay for it, but there's still often going to be needs for interpreters to communicate with their court-appointed counsel that wouldn't be covered by this bill. So there is some savings.
One final, real brief question. As I read this bill, if a person who would qualify for use of an interpreter or a translator were actually bringing conventional lawsuit against someone, the state would be required to provide them with an interpreter or a translator. Say I'm suing a third party that's run into me at a stop sign. Is that correct? Am I reading this thing correctly?
Senator Gretzky, under several of the amendments, yes, that would be true. It wouldn't be under the original bill in the LC-1.
That's the low-budget program. This is a multiple-choice amendment selection.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked with counsel, and they thought that if you pick which philosophy you wanted, then the amendment would be here and the price tag would be here, and it would be an easy way to make the decisions. Excuse me.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd have a question about your LC3. Are we clear that we can non-discriminate here if we pay for all in criminal and only if in civil, only if they're indigent?
Madam Chair, it is not clear, other than there is no really direct case law on that. The discussion at the last hearing was if there was any place you would probably be able to discriminate between indigent and non-indigent would be to separate out the criminal from the civil, because in the criminal you have the constitutional protections and things that are more liable to give rise to that kind of lawsuit.
Madam Chair, it seems to me...
Yeah, the best thing to look at is her memo.
Without focusing on the specific amendments, because I haven't got them sorted out, but it seems to me that it's appropriate to pay for interpreter in all criminal cases, and that whether it's appropriate or not, it's probably not realistic to ask for it in this session that it be paid for in civil cases, because if I wouldn't get through ways and means anyway. So maybe we would do better to, and I favor providing for an interpreter in criminal cases try for an interpreter to the indigent.
Okay, I assume that's LC1, that, Jack?
I believe that's correct.
Indigent civil cases and...
Shaking your head.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. LC3 provides for all criminal cases, and...
Pardon? Which LC?
LC-3 provides for the state to pay in all criminal proceedings and for the interpreters in civil if they're indigent. The other thing it does is then in sign language interpretation, it doesn't make that distinction. And that was because of the federal law that we, and that's.
Let's see. In,
okay, so, but that still doesn't address Senator Shoemaker's recommendation, which was all criminal for sign plus language and nothing in civil. And I don't see, which, tell me which, if you do LC1, is that do what he said?
Madam Chair, that is correct. LC1 does. Ed, LC1 just covers criminal indigent and criminal arraignments, which is a stage where you never know if they're indigent or not, if they're going to get court-appointed counsel or not. So it doesn't cover all criminal proceedings. So you need it. I didn't know if Senator Shoemaker was going to distinguish between the sign language interpretation because of federal law or not. No, okay. Then I need to do a quick and dirty. Okay, then I need to do an LC-5 that I could do real quick.
Oh, God.
Senator. Question about counselor here. Am I wrong? If somebody gets charged with a crime and they need a translator or interpreter, they've been getting one. Isn't that their constitutional protection? How can they be represented without one?
They have been.
So whatever we're doing here, we're expanding it so that even their bottom line deal is $500,000. So what's the deal? I don't understand. Even for the criminal indigent defendant who needs a translator and interpreter, we're already giving that. Guys, I understand that even this bottom line deal, somehow we're increasing it by $500,000. So what are we giving these people if they aren't already getting? You know?
LC-1, Senator Grinsky, what it does is, what it gives them that they're not already getting is the civil indigent, and then it gets it in, giving it in the situation where the court needs,
can't support
it. Yeah, where they don't get it now, and there's no method for payment.
No, but I thought...
They get friends, relatives to come in and translate. It's pretty bad.
I think this bill may just die right here.
I'd see no reason for us to be, that's a Cadillac deal. In an ideal world, sure. But people choose to go into court, and that's the price you pay. It's like hiring a lawyer, and that's just the way it is. It's one thing to require it in a criminal defense situation. We're already providing that. So I just don't see the need for it myself. I'm not going to support it.
Madam Chair.
Jack?
I guess the only thing I remember is, as I recall the testimony, is that this wasn't aimed so much at constitutional requirements for criminal indigence, but there were requirements of federal law that were attempting to be addressed, as I remember the testimony. I just throw that out as a reminder.
Then I guess one would move the 969-1 and send it to Ways and Means. I guess that's what I would do. And not get into any of the other versions.
I understand it. I'm not sure.
That's the bill that came to us. and...
We have a hand in gross addition of that, is that correct? We got a hand in gross bill.
It should be attached to the original testimony of Bill Linden.
When we had the hearing, yeah, here it is. It didn't have LC-1 identified as the amendment, but this is the same as that, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
22-26-29, yeah.
Those amendments had not been through LC at that time.
Okay, that is it. So if we look at the hand in gross version, we'll see what we're getting into
yes,
here.
Yes, and we had, that's essentially the testimony we had.
Well, then that extends to civil cases as well, if I read this correctly.
Remember, we had testimony that included people who lost their kids because they were brought into court in a civil case and didn't have an interpreter because they couldn't understand the language. And this is meant to allow the court, in those circumstances, in civil cases, to appoint an interpreter. So it does expand it in some areas to do that. I assume that's the purpose of the bill that we have before us.
Madam Chair, that's true. The other thing it did was it allowed the court in those circumstances where it needed it to fulfill its function to appoint interpreters, like, because they're often until you have the interpreter, you don't know if they're indigent or not. Yes, ma'am. I'll hush.
Someone testified that they lost their kids because
yes.
they went in and the court didn't understand them and the court was
no,
willing
they,
to
yes, the
hold
court,
a proceeding
they could, yes.
people that...
We had testimony to that effect.
The problem is it doesn't delineate that situation from the case where someone just goes in as a plaintiff.
Well, the court's going to be judiciously responsible for putting out these monies, so the chair would move the dash one amendments to 969. Are there objections?
If I read it correctly, it's not limited to criminal cases. I'm
that's true. We've been debating, we've
yeah.
been giving examples with respect to the testimony of the people that the court needed to allow some flexibility in its dispensation of how it runs to, on occasion, appoint interpreters to in civil cases. That allows the court the discretion. And I think that's what we're talking about here. It allows some expansion.
Is that it?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir.
That's why I'm moving the dash one, because I think if we don't have sentiment on the committee to expand it to general civil all over everybody, which is a dash four, we don't really have support for people who are dealing with sub three, which is the pay for indigent and civil across the board. So we're left, I think, with a dash one, which is where we are.
You're recommending.
I'm certainly recommending dash one.
Yeah.
Unless somebody else wants to deal with two, I think three or four are out of the question, given what we are with the money.
Madam Chair, quite frankly, the two, it's not that much more money for two, and it does bring in.
Okay, I'm willing
does,
to do it.
It
What's
does
it do?
Bring,
the two brings in the sign language for
there's
everyone, even if they're not, even if they're not indigent.
Well, no, Madam Chair, still the one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, we have. Are there objections to my motion to adopt dash one? So ordered. Chair would move Senate Bill 969 as amended to the Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Discussion.
I'm going to vote against it for one simple reason. I think it's still a little too broad. I think the language should be cleaned up a little bit. I think it could apply to other people than is intended. And maybe we're just getting overwhelmed with too much material on this deal, but that's the way I read this thing at the present time. But the concept, I think I support, as I understand it, but I just don't feel that this does it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brenneman.
We've been struggling with this indigent fence thing, and this keeps coming back at us all the time for more money all the time. And I just don't think in good conscience I can add this in when we're going with that every session.
Okay. Call roll, please.
Brenneman.
No.
Brockman. Brenneman.
No.
Hill.
Aye.
Schumaker.
Aye.
Brenneman.
Aye.
Aye, motion carried. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I've been summoned by the pages. Apparently, we don't have a quorum down there.
Okay.
And it's going to be one of us, so I'm going to go ahead, I guess, and out.
Thank you. We just have a couple bills left. Jack?
We have
better choose ones we're ready to move on. 283?
283.
Relating to indigent defense.
Senate Bill 283 is the bill that's been brought to us by the Judicial Department. There are amendments. And unfortunately, they are somewhat difficult. So there are handed list of copies attached.
We have Bill Linden here. Discuss them.
The dash 3 amendments, along with the handed gross version from the State Court Administrator, the dash 4 from the State Public Defender.
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. Senate Bill 283 was filed at our request, and our intent was to consolidate the administration of appellate indigent defense services. Since the first hearing on this bill, we have met with the State Public Defender Office representative and have narrowed the issues of disagreement. The dash 3 amendments, which you have, are proposed by our office, the dash 4 proposed by the State Public Defender. The differences basically revolve around three issues. Existing language provides that the public defender can refuse to take a case if they are unable to serve. And the unable to serve language can mean, or has meant, that if they don't think they can handle the case because of other caseload considerations, that they will decline to provide representation. Our dash 3 amendments would change that term unable to serve to has an actual conflict of interest. And the effect of that would be to add more caseload, and there would be a corresponding need for more money for the State Public Defender, but it would focus in that agency the primary responsibility for appellate indigent defense work, as opposed to what happens now, which is when the unable to serve language is invoked, that case automatically flops into the indigent defense fund. So we don't have any real control over how many appellate cases we have to handle in the indigent defense fund, but we estimate the number about 700 in the biennium, and they cost roughly $330,000-$340,000. Putting in actual conflict of interest language would give us at least a more stable playing field. We'd know that we'd be responsible for only those conflict cases, and that the State Public Defender's Office would be the primary provider of appellate indigent defense services, including everything but the conflicts. The second issue has to do with whether or not the State Public Defender ought to handle cases coming out of state institutions. The State Public Defender prefers not to handle these, and we're suggesting that they do. And here we're talking about Fairview, Damish, Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center, state institutions of that nature.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hill.
Who handles those now?
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, right now, those are handled by appointment, paid out of the Indigent Defense Fund. So they're not handled by the State Public Defender. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No, you're correct on that.
So we are in the Indigent Defense Fund providing counsel for persons lodged in those institutions.
Madam Chair, then I have to ask, are these things included in the public defender's budget then?
Madam Chair, Senator Hill, no. This would involve, at the Ways and Means level, allocation of funds from the Indigent Defense Fund to the State Public Defender. And one of the effects of that would be that if the funds that were allocated were insufficient, the State Public Defender would have an obligation to get additional funding from the legislature or the emergency board for the appellate work that they'd be doing and the post-conviction habeas corpus. Right now, part of the deficit that we deal with every biennium does involve costs we spend in appellate indigent defense work. The third issue has to do with payment to trial court attorneys for consultation once a case has come on appeal. And the current arrangement is that the State Court Administrator, the Indigent Defense Fund, pays those expenses. We're proposing the State Public Defender be responsible for those consultation fees when they're talking to trial counsel after they've taken an appeal. I believe that